Okay, let's learn. Let's learn. Parshas Truma. Excellent. Glad you're here. Okay, so we begin. Parshas Truma is going to begin a series of Parshia, which are going to be discussing the construction of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, and all the various kalim, vessels, clothing that are associated with it. We are on page 452. So each year, as we go through them, we take a different aspect to study. Let's learn the menorah this year. We're actually 450, I'm sorry, 450. What I'd like to focus on as far as learning the menorah this year is a very complicated vessel, one of the kalim, and particularly that the sages say that Moshe had trouble with this. More than any of the other vessels that Moshe constructs, or anyone constructs as far as the tabernacle and Mishkan goes, on this particular, the construction of the menorah, we find the language of nitkashebo, that Moshe had trouble, he had difficulty, he couldn't figure out how or what to do. And what I want to focus on is that the sages actually give, and Rashi quotes, three different responses. It would be one thing if we just had one statement, that Moshe had trouble and Hashem helped him out in this way or that way. Three different responses that Rashi is going to quote, all from various midrashim or gemaras, of what was the response, what did Hashem do to help him once Moshe got stuck? And then take a look at why do we need three? What do we do with all of these different responses? What's so complicated? What is it about the menorah that elicited that difficulty? And then why do we have those different responses? What are the three responses? Let's just jump in and then we'll go back through the psukim and work our way backwards. What are the three responses? One response we're going to find in at the end of our parsha when the discussion is of the menorah. When the Torah says at the very end, we say, Re'ei va'asei, take a look and do it. That's how the Torah is going to describe the construction of the menorah. Look, see it, and then you'll make it. Rashi quotes on that language, Magid sheniskashe Moshe b'maisa ha-menorah. That's that language. This teaches us that Moshe had difficulty with the construction of the menorah. Ad sheheralo kadosh baruch hu menorah shel esh. Until Hashem showed him a fiery menorah. Menorah made out of fire. He didn't know how to make it. And that's the language of Re'ei Va'asei. Look! So if you want to see, that's the Pasuk on Pasuk Mem, verse 40, on page 452, the last Pasuk at the end of the paragraph. Look! See! Says Rashi. What was he supposed to look at? He couldn't figure it out until Hashem showed him a menorah of fire. Now, in Parshas Bahalosha, in Sefer Bamidbar, where the mitzvah is given for the Kohanim to actually light the menorah, there also we have a language of Hashem showing Moshe something. And there at the beginning of Parshas Bahalosha, I'll just read it to you, you don't have to all flip your pages. At the beginning of Perek Ches, the Pasuk says, the menorah kamar'eh asher hera Hashem es Moshe. It was made, the menorah, according to the vision that Hashem showed Moshe. So again, the Pasuk again gives us this language that Hashem had to show Moshe something. And here Rashi quotes, on that language that it was a menorah that Hashem showed Moshe, Shehareyu HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'etzva. Hashem showed him with his finger, lefisha niskashebo, because it was difficult. Moshe had trouble with it, that Hashem had to show him with his finger, look, it's like this. Now this Rashi is taken from a Gemara Maseches Menachos that says, b'shlosha dvarim niskashe Moshe. Three things Moshe had trouble with. Three things he couldn't figure out. Moshe Hashem taught him, and he couldn't figure out. One was the Levana, the new moon. One was the Shratzim. There are different bugs, which some bugs create different levels of tumma, of ritual impurity, and Moshe wasn't sure which bugs were which. Which bugs are you just kill and not to deal with? Some bugs, if you kill and you touch them, it creates a certain level. Which ones? You gave me all this list. I don't know what's what. And the third was our description of the menorah. The Gemara says, three things Moshe couldn't figure out. Ad shehareyo HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'etzbo, until Hashem showed him with his finger, said, Kazeh, look at the new moon. Like this, Moshe, this is what the new moon looks like. Kazeh, these bugs are like this, these bugs are like that, and Kazeh, look at this menorah. Now that's not a menorah of Eish, that's just an image of, this is what the menorah should look like. So we have one medrash that Rashi quotes in our parsha that Moshe had difficulty. The same language, nitkashebo, it was difficult for him. So he showed him a menorah fire. Rashi later quotes that Moshe had difficulty, so Hashem showed him with his finger in the same way that he showed him the bugs, in the same way that he showed him the new moon. It's like this, Moshe, this is what it looks like. And then we have a third instance, also back in our parsha, in the very beginning of the description on the language, you could see it, it's in, on the beginning of our parsha verse, we're jumping on, usually we read straight through the psukim, I know that we're doing it a little bit out of order, I apologize, but in the very first verse in 31, Pasuk Lamed Aleph on page 450, V'asisa menorah sahav tahor, you'll make the menorah, miksha te'aseh. Ha-menorah. It should be hammered, shall the menorah be made? That language of shall the menorah be made is odd. Usually it would say, shall you make it? To say, shall it be made is a passive type of language. And so Rashi quotes, what's with that language? Every other time the Torah describes the making of the vessels, it says active. Ta'aseh, do it like this, do it like that. And here it's, it shall be made. Rashi says, what's the meaning of the language of it shall be made? Melamed Rashi says, this teaches us, me'eleha, that the menorah was made on its own. It was just made. Lefisha haya Moshe miskashibo, because Moshe had a lot of trouble with it. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hashlech es hakikar l'or, throw the entire goblet of gold into the fire, v'hinas es me'eleha, and it will emerge on its own, exactly the way that it needs to be made. And that's why the language of the pasuk is, it shall be made. Now, this, for a student of Rashi, who reads three times, Moshe had trouble with the construction of the menorah. Okay, that alone is itself that we need to discuss. And then Rashi offers three different solutions that were given to Moshe's difficulty. One time he says, Hashem said to him, you know what? Just throw the whole thing into the fire. I'll take care of it. And what emerged out of the fire is the menorah. Okay. Then another time, he showed him a menorah, a fire, so that he can make it. And then a third time, he shows him with his finger. It looks like this, Moshe. Why three different explanations of Moshe? First of all, why is he having so much trouble? And what's with all the explanations? Three different statements from Chazal as to how Hashem responded. What do we need three different responses? What are we to make of all of that? That's the problem that I'd like to address this morning. Yeah? Clear? Clear as mud?
I didn't say anything.
Just making sure. Okay. Let's take a look at some of the psukim. Usually we do it the other way around. Let's take a look at some psukim. All right, let's learn together. Pasuk 450, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Asisa menorah sahav tahor. You shall make a menorah of pure gold. Miksha te'aseh ha-menorah. Hammered out shall the menorah be made. Yirecha v'kana gviya kaftore ufracheha mimena yihiyu. The base, the shaft, the cups, the knobs, and its blossoms shall all be hammered from it. Okay, let's take a look at this pasuk. So what do we have in this pasuk? Number one, what is the menorah made out of?
Gold.
Pure gold. It has to be a piece of pure gold. It also has to be miksha. It has to be hammered out. What does it mean that it has to be hammered out? Rashi explains, instead of taking pure gold and taking all the different components, you see in the very bottom of your art scroll, you see a picture of the menorah. I'm going to show you another picture in a moment. There are several components to the menorah. There's the base, there's the main shaft up the middle, and then the six different branches that come off of the sides. Yeah?
Sorry, but I really have a burning question here.
Burning question, yes.
I really mean it.
Like fire! Yes, no pun intended at all, yes.
In the Rashi on this, right, where it talks about the branches,
yeah,
describes exactly how they're supposed to go and how it's supposed to be diagonal from the central shaft. I don't know what the Hebrew means
the
same as diagonal, but if it's diagonal, doesn't that mean that it's supposed to be straight?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to show you. We'll see. You have a burning question on the picture in the bottom of the art scroll.
Yeah, because most of the time it's this way. It's
okay, I hear a burning question. So we'll.
Yeah, that's the only one. That's it.
That's the only burning question. So far, we're doing well.
Okay,
let's I don't know if we'll get to exact. We'll get to that kind of issue. Okay, so we have the base, we have the, which is called the Yerecha, we have the Kana, the central branch that goes straight up the middle, and then you have the six branches, three on each side, whether they come off on 45 degree angles on a diagonal or they're rounded, and then the Torah describes cups, knobs, and blossoms. Gvieha, kaftoreha ufrocheha. So there are various, again, I was in the middle saying, so what does it mean they were hammered out? So one might have thought that I can make all of these components. I can make the base, and I can make the shaft, and I can make all of the ornaments, the cups, and the flowers. So the Torah derives miksha, hammered out, meaning you take one solid piece of gold, and then you have to hammer out this menorah out of that solid piece of gold with all of its intricate design, out of so that it is one solid piece. So it's solid gold, Zahav Tahor, and it is a solid piece of all the different components. Let's just read quickly through some of the psukim. Shisha kanim yotzim mitzida. You're going to have six branches coming out of the side. Shlosha kanim ro mitzida yachad. Shlosha kanim ro mitzida. Three from one side and three from another side. Shlosha gviyim mishu kadim bakanoha echad. Kaftor vaferach. We'll just translate this literally. Three cups engraved like almonds on one branch, a knob and a flower, and then three cups engraved with like almonds on the next branch, a knob and a flower. So for the six branches that emerge from the menorah, all of them will have three cups, a knob, and a flower. And it on the menorah shall be, the next pasuk, Lamed Daled, four cups engraved like almonds, its knobs, and its flowers. How many knobs are we up to so far? Not total, just on each branch. We had three, and then the next pasuk says that there are four. Well, somewhere there needs to be, we had three, a knob and a flower, and then we had a four cups. Is that four additional cups, or is that one more cup to give us a total of four? Its knobs and its flowers. A knob shall be under two of the branches from it. A knob under two of the branches from it. And a knob under two of the branches from it. That's clear, right?
Yeah,
very clear, okay. For the six branches emerging from the menorah. Their knobs and the branches shall be of it. I'm just reading in English. I don't need to confuse you with the Hebrew. I think the English is just confusing enough. The knobs and the branches shall be of it, all of a single hammered piece of pure gold. Fine. Now we have that. And then the Torah describes in verse 37, Lamed Zayin, that you make the lamp seven, kindle its lamp so as to give light towards its face, so that all the light is directed towards the middle branch. That if you were to look at it, the middle branch has its light in the center, and then all of the six on the sides, three on the right side point towards the middle, three on the left side point towards the middle, and that is your menorah. Okay. Now, if you had to draw a picture, well, what do those knobs, almonds, flowers, what exactly does that look like? And all you had were these psukim, what would you come up with? So that would be a confusing approach because the language is a little complex, exactly what it is. So I just brought for you, just to show you, this is a wonderful sefer called Mishkan Hashem, and they have the drawings of what the vessels look like. Now, some of you can't really see, but I just want to show you the various explanations. So this is the start of their explanation of the menorah. Here you have, for example, the rounded menorah. I just want to show you, just because of the burning question we had a moment ago, that we do have a picture that has with the diagonal branches. Can you see that? Could be, I'm not familiar. But what I want to show you, here are three different bases. So everybody agrees that it's gold. Is it square, rounded, or what's the right word? It's like a hexagon? I don't. One, two, three, four, five. I see six different sides. Different opinions, and each one is attributed to, this is the Kolbo, this is the Rabbi Avram ben Avram, this is the Yalkut Shimon. Different opinions as to, well, what exactly did the base look like? Then we get to our cups, flowers, and almond-shaped things. So you have some of what it looks like. And then you have all of the opinions as to how did you put them together at the top of each branch. Is it three cups, and then an almond, and a flower? Or was it three cups side by side, not one on top of the other, and then out of the middle one emerges the almond and the flower? Or it's two cups under one underneath the other, and then a third cup is on top with all the ornaments there? Or are the three cups? So we have quite a number of opinions, just how do you do the top, how do you do the branches? If you take all of your permutations of the three bases, and whether or not it's diagonal or rounded. And how do you do, I have at least just four here, there are more, how do you do the cups? And this is just the top of the cups. We still have yet more as far as the permutations go, because we have to, twice the Torah said three cups and then four cups. If you had all your permutations, you would have quite a different, various numbers of potential menorahs that one could construct. Besides for the difficulty of actually taking a single block of gold and hammering out from a single block of gold whichever vision you want to go with. That's difficult enough just on a logistic, physical level. How do you do that? Well, what's it supposed to look like given the psukim that we have? So we can start from here and say, when the sages say, Moshe had trouble with the menorah, so you can understand on a base that before we get into any of the Kabbalistic, mystical, deeper meanings, just what does it look like? What should this menorah look like? We can understand that this was a complicated element of what to do.
But
which
not all of those had to come out of one piece of wood.
Correct.
One block,
right.
The whole menorah. So how is it that each branch is made out of its own solid gold? Is that true?
No, the whole thing was a solid piece of gold.
So from one solid
we hammered out the menorah.
You hammered out.
Correct. You were not allowed to do a branch and then attach it to your central branch.
So from the central. Okay.
It's like a marble and you're sculpting.
Right.
Chiseling.
Right.
Chiseling. Yeah. Hammering. Chiseling.
Right.
But then you just have to go to the basement of the Vatican. They have all the kaolin there now.
Yeah, we should have sent Moshe to the Vatican. I have a better solution. Moshe is sitting there on Hasina. I'm not sure. Hashem. A fourth answer. Fiery menorah. He showed him with his finger. He said, throw it into the fire or just go to the Vatican, Moshe. The Christians have the answers for everything. That would have been one answer. Okay. Now it's interesting to note, if you've been to Yerushalayim recently, Machon HaMikdash, there's a whole organization, an institute that is recreating all of the vessels that are necessary in a way that are ready to be used. So they have in the central square there, what do they call that square? Right outside the Ramban Shul. There's a square there in the plaza, right outside in the old city before you go down the steps to the Kotel. So they have they built a menorah. And there it is. It's a solid. It weighs. They have all the stats on the thing there. They have it encased in a big glass where they're ready to light the menorah. Now the menorah does not have to be solid gold. The Gemara derives from the language of Teyaseh, which we said it shall be made. It shall be made no matter what you have. Even if you don't have gold, make it out of some other type of metal. Ideally, of course, it should be made out of gold, but you need to have one. They have a menorah there. I believe it is made out of gold. It's very, very expensive. And we have it ready to go. But we have various opinions as to what it actually is. So let's break this down a little bit as best we can. First of all, the commentators look for a lot of symbolism in all of these all the aspects of the menorah. The fact that it has to be a solid piece of gold, the fact that it's pure gold, the fact that it has to be one solid piece, all of the flowers and the cups. What's the meaning of all of these things? So briefly, I just wanted to share two approaches, we could really spend much more time on them, but just to get the sense of how the commentators, the Mefarshim, are looking for the meaning and explanation. The Abarbanel, who was a great Portuguese commentator, he died in 1508. He lived during the Inquisition. He was the leader of the Jewish community of Spain. He was in Portugal. Spain, of course, they were exiled in 1492, and in Portugal about 5 years later. And he had he was in the court with the king and the queen. And there are many, many stories of how he was exiled. He was kicked out of the land, and how he led the Jews during that time. He died in 1508. Classic commentator on the Chumash. So he sees in the idea of the menorah sat in the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. There was the courtyard and then the inner Heichal. The inner Heichal was a place where only the Kohanim can go, and it had three main vessels. It had the Lechem HaPanim, the showbread, and the golden altar, which was a smaller altar for incense, and there was the menorah. So almost all the commentators, when they look at the menorah to try to find the symbolism and the meaning, see in it the idea of either wisdom or spirituality. It sat opposite the showbread. The showbread represented physical, material wealth and blessing, represented by the bread in the Beis HaMikdash, that God will bless us with everything that we need. And opposite the showbread was the menorah, the idea of light and fire. And the menorah, almost all the commentators see in that some version of wisdom, chachma, spirituality, spiritual growth. See, the Barbanel sees in it the idea of wisdom, of chachma, and the idea of it having to be pure gold is that the Torah and the wisdom of the Torah has to be pure and not tainted by foreign or alien ideas. And he derives from the fact that it has to be hammered out of one gold, one piece of gold, all of the cups and all of the flowers and all of the almond shapes and all of that, that those ideas represent other wisdoms of the world. There are many other wisdoms of the world, and that they're all hammered out of the single piece of gold that is the essence of Torah, and they really all emanate from that. It's not that these wisdoms are separate. Hafach ba, the hafach ba de kula ba, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, delve into the Torah, delve into the Torah, it's all there. That all the wisdom of the world emanates from the Torah, and he sees in the symbolism of pure gold and hammering out of one single piece all the symbolism of all the other things that are out there. Just recognize that they're all attached to this single concept of gold and emanate from the wisdom of the Torah. We could discuss this at much greater length, just to whet the appetite, so to speak, with some of the ideas that he sees in that. Interesting that he lived, of course, in the golden age of Spain, Portugal, where they were very into philosophy and mathematics and science, and so he sees in the symbolism of the menorah, that idea of taking all that the world has to offer and seeing it as being part of an intricate part, integral part of the single piece of gold that represents the wisdom of the Torah itself. The year that he died, in 1508, Rav Moshe Alshich was born, and the Alshich lived in Tzvat. He was in that golden era of Tzvat, which we discuss in our Great Jewish Books course, lived during the time of Rabbi Yosef Cairo, lived during the time of the Arizal. He was a Kabbalist, referred to as the Alshich HaKadosh, and he sees in the symbolism of the menorah the idea of the spiritual quest of mankind to achieve his purity, and that the gold, the pure gold of the menorah, represents the purity that man has to achieve, and it has to be hammered out, because man is not born in a way where we've taken care of all of our deficiencies. Everybody's born with their stuff, and the goal of life is to, so to speak, hammer out and chisel from whatever we're given to become that pure, pristine, single piece, and to recognize that all of man, or woman for that matter, is one. All of the different components of mankind, all of the different drives, struggles that we have, are really all unified, and he breaks down the different components. The base is called the Yerecha, which from the language of a yerech, which is the thigh or the loins, which is representative of a sexual drive, or the way that we refer to a child is often referred to in the Torah of Yerech Yaakov, like came out of his loins, so to speak. So the base represents that drive. The kana, the central beam, which comes out of the center, he understands as being a reference to dibur, to the way that we speak and purifying our language. And the cups referring to eating and drinking and purifying the way that we deal with our physical needs and the way that we eat and we drink. And so he has a whole piece describing the purity of the gold is not wisdom of the Torah, but the spirituality and the quest of mankind to become one in the process of hammering out. Remember again from the Great Jewish Books course we spoke about in Tzfat and Kabbalah, which was really flowering during that time, and the idea of crushing the vessels and gathering up all the sparks of holiness. So in that world, he saw in the menorah that symbolism of taking all of these components, really seeing them as one and unified, which is a big theme in Kabbalah, which we spoke about, seeing the unity of Hashem, the unity of the world, even though in the world we live, it's disparate, many different parts, but it's really only one. If you remember just the Maharal we spoke about, both in this year and in the Maharal's class in the Great Jewish Books, of taking, when Hashem gave us the Torah, he gave it was b'dibur echad, it was in one dibur, but we couldn't hear it or understand it that way, so then he had to go over it again, one utterance, he gave it to us in sentence by sentence, which represented the idea that even though in the world we live in, the world of period of separation and a lack of unity, so we see things one step at a time, one mitzvah at a time. We could break down the Torah, but at its core, it's really only one, even though we can't perceive or experience it that way, but that's what it is. So when he gave it to us, he gave it in one utterance, the whole thing. And then we said, we can't understand it. So, okay, fine. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. lo yelecha, because we can only handle things one at a time. But that doesn't mean they're separate. In the world we live in, one can think, this mitzvah, I can study this mitzvah alone in a vacuum. It's not really true. It's only because we live in a world of such... We live after the white light was shown through the prism, and now we see all the different colors of the rainbow. But it's really one light at its core. Okay, that was a two-second synopsis of what we spoke about at much greater length. In any case, all of that, so the Al-Sheikh sees in the menorah, it's really all one. There's a base, there's a central piece, there's six branches. We live in a world of seeing all these different things that represent all the different elements of mankind, but the goal is to unify them all to be one solid piece of everything. Okay, all of those things are... Kana, the central the central beam was for Dibur. Okay, so Moshe has trouble. He looks at all of what needs to be done in all of this. What needs to be symbolized, what it represents, the intricacy of just putting this all together, and it's clear he has trouble. So I want to share with you a Maral. The Maral asks the question that we started with, but why do we have so many different statements from Chazal as to how Hashem then helped him out? The Maral asks the question, this is the way that he asks it as follows. The Gemara said that it was one of three things that Hashem showed him with his finger. He showed him the new moon, he showed him the bugs, and he showed him the menorah. Says the Maral, at the end of that Gemara, when you stop there, what was the goal, what was the net result of Hashem showing him with his finger? Now what? What would you think? Now he knows what to do. That's the goal of showing somebody. When Hashem shows you with his finger, this is the new moon. You got it? Great. These are the bugs that are okay. These are the bugs that have this ramification. It would seem, says the Maral, that when Hashem showed him with his finger that this is the menorah, it should net the result of, now I got it. Now I see what it is that you want me to do. So the Maral says, so then why does it say, as Rashi quotes, that Hashem told him, you know what? Just throw it in the fire, and I'll take care of it. What will emerge will be this miraculous menorah. Says, I don't understand. If when Moshe read the psukim, he didn't get it. So if he doesn't get it, so tell him, throw it into the fire, and I'll do it. Why did you have that step in between in which you said, I'll show it to you, now you got it. Oh, you still can't do it. Okay, throw it into the fire. If you're not going to be able to do it, just throw it in. Why have this in-between of showing it to him, which seems to be an answer to a problem? It was the answer to the problem by the new moon. It was the answer to the problem by the bug. That's all he needed. It should have been the answer to the problem by the menorah, except it isn't. So why does he do it? Why does he show it to him like that? Someone else says an amazing thing. Someone else says... He had to show him so that Moshe understood well all the characteristics. He had to have the picture of, well, that's what it looks like. The cups and the flowers and the almonds and the branches. I got it. He had to see it clear. The oz, why? Because now that he had it clear, Moshe could start. He could start working on it. And then it would be made on its own. To show him, when he showed him, he could start. And then when he could start, it could be done on its own, miraculously. Says Moral, what's that mean? Hayatzorach l'maisa Moshe. It needed Moshe to get started. It needed his activity. It needed his involvement. Ki li Yisroel tziva. Hashem commanded us to make the menorah. And not to be done completely through some type of miracle. Lefika chayetzorach lahavin tavnis haminora. Moshe had to understand it well. De imlo kein echias chilasos. How could he start if he didn't understand? Moshe needed to start. He needed to start because kol peulos shiboyim milamala. Every action which comes from above that Hashem says, I'll do this for you. Tzarech shiyase ha'adam lemata. Require man's input from down here. The only time not, well, a little bit we see, I'll get back to that example. Hold off that second. We always see man needs to do something. So Moshe needs to start. He says, I don't know what to do. I can't start until I see the whole picture of what needs to be done. I need to see that clearly. I need, what do the base look like? What is the base? What are the branches? Where are the almonds and the cups and the flowers? How many and where? So Herolo Be'etzbo, he showed him with his finger so that he had the complete picture. When he had the complete picture, he could start. Why couldn't he start without the picture? How do you start doing something you don't know what the end goal is? If you don't know what the end goal is, you can't start. Once he got started, he said, I can't do this though. This is impossible. He says, I know. But now that you've started, throw it into the fire. I'll finish it for you. But you can't start if you don't have a picture of what your end goal is. You can't even start. What am I doing? So he showed him with his finger what it looks like. That's an amazing idea. Sometimes you get involved in a task and you say, I can't do that. There's no way that this task I can finish on my own. So one way, so you throw it back in God's lap and say, this, you want it done, you do it. You have to get started. But there's only one way you can get started. You have to at least have in your mind the picture of what will this look like when it's done. I have to have that mapped out. I can't get there. That's okay. But you can't get started if you don't have the goal. And if you don't get started, Hashem can't help you.
But did he ever actually get started?
So yes. So that's what the Maharal learns. In other words, the dance that the sages are giving us of all these different responses are, he had trouble. So he said, I don't have to do. So he showed him with his finger the image of what it looked like so that he could start. And then he said, I can't do this. This is an impossible task. He says, I know, but I needed you to get started so that I can finish. And the moral says, and that is all pu'ulos, every time you want something milamala, some type of divine intervention, which Hashem is going to do something that you can't do, he won't if you don't involve yourself and get started. But there's only one way you can involve yourself. You have to know what you want. You have to know what it looks like. You have to know what the goal is so that I could begin the task, and then he will begin. Rav Hartman, Rav Shu Hartman, who wrote the notes, he wrote a commentary on the Maral. So he brings two other places where you see this. He brings more than that. I'll just share two of them, actually. He says one is on the count of the Levium. When Moshe, later on in Sefer Bamidbar, was required to count the Levium. So all the other tribes were counted from age 20 to 50, 20 to 60. So no problem. So he'd go to every tent. How many 20-year-olds? How many? And they would come out, and they would actually come to Moshe, and he would meet each one and count, and he would get the whole system as to how they were counting. But the Levium were counted from 1 month and up. So Moshe says, 1 month and up. How am I supposed to count them? They're babies with their mothers. They're nursing in the tents. How do I go around? I don't know. How am I supposed to do that? I can't go in. So that's the language that Chazal quote that Moshe asked Hashem. Like, I can't count these babies. Why do I figure out how many there are? Amalei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Asay es shelcha, you do your part, v'ani esay et sheli, and I'll do my part. Halach Moshe v'omer al pesach ha'olam. Moshe would go from tent to tent, stand at the entrance to the tent, ubas kol yotze min ha'ol, and a heavenly voice would emanate from the tent, v'omer es kach v'kach tinokos yesh bo'ol zeh. This and this, the number of children and babies are in this tent. So Moshe wouldn't be walking into tents, right and left. You know what it's like, you have a new baby. You want Moshe Rabbeinu walking into your tent. You spend 4 days cleaning up. Who has time to clean up? I got a nursing baby. So Moshe, Hashem says, you do your part, I'll do mine. So why doesn't Moshe just stand in his tent and let Hashem give him a count? Mm-hmm. It'd be easier, no? Mm-hmm. Hashem says, you do your part, I'll do mine. So what does Moshe have to do? He stands in front of each tent, and then the voice comes out and says, you have 5 people who live in this tent. Mm-hmm. As an example of, you can't just sit in your office, Moshe, and think I'm going to tell you the count. I told you to count the people. Go and count the people. You can't go any further than that. It's not appropriate. You go as far as you can. I'll take it from there. That's example number one that he gives. And the other example is actually from the erecting of the Mishkan itself, where the pieces were too heavy. It was impossible. And Hashem uses the exact same language of Aseh Eshelcha, Vani Eseh Et Sheli. You do what you need to do, and I will do. The language there is Aseik Atabiyadcha. You toil with your hands. Venira Kimikim. It'll look like you're doing it. Moshe went as if he was lifting it, and then it lifted on its own. So why doesn't Moshe get sit back and just the walls? Doesn't work that way. You got to put your hands underneath them, lift up. I'll take. You can't. I can't. you do up to the limit of what you can do, and I will take it from there. And that is this idea that we see here of showing him with his finger and then telling him to throw it in. Which leaves us, that's the moral beautiful idea on those two, which leaves us with one other statement from Chazal, which is the fire. Why did he have to, so we have him showed it with his finger, and then he threw it into the fire, and then we have a third statement that he showed him an image of the fire. I'd like to make the following suggestion. This is just my suggestion, so take it or leave it. What I'm about to share with you is not mine. It's from the Rav of Soloveitchik. And he does not connect these two things, but that's the part that I want to do. The Rav asks the same question that we've been addressing this entire time, which is, what was so difficult for Moshe to construct? And he suggests the following idea, that the Mishkan itself, the entire tabernacle, had to meet two criteria. One, it was precise mathematical measurements from an architectural standpoint. Just building the entire tabernacle was a very intricate task. And number two, it had to be an inspiring and impressive structure. It had to be the kind of place that was a home for the presence of Hashem himself. And so that when the people would come to the Mishkan, they would be able to appreciate the Mishkan's mysterious, ethereal quality in addition to its architectural blueprints. That God wanted something that would attract and inspire the Jewish people. And that needed more than just architecture. It required something divine, something inspirational, that when you would come, it would be a moving experience. So the Rav suggested the menorah too had that dual element. It was clearly an intricate structure with the knobs, a single piece of gold hammered out. But more than just the combination of oil, knobs, and other decorations was this spark of godly personality and of the divine presence itself. And the purpose of the menorah was to kindle the lamp continuously. Tamid, it was always burning, and not just an oil-fueled light, but the reflection of a transcendental world of that Hashem saw the light and it was good from the beginning of Bereshis. Vayara Elokim Esa Or Kitov, and that creative spiritual light was going to be manifest in this menorah of its continual perpetual burning, that when a Jew could see this menorah, it would be an inspiration of the light, the spiritual light. And the second element that Moshe found difficult, he said, maybe he could figure out easily how to actually construct a menorah, but certainly he said, how do I construct a menorah that would then not only be this intricate architectural wonder, but when you saw it, would inspire, opposite the showbread, which was material wealth, when you saw the menorah, you were filled with the spiritual enlightenment of, whether you go with the Abarbanel of seeing all the wisdom of the world as part of the Torah, seeing the growth of mankind, the unity of mankind, and his growth as part of all of the Torah. Moshe said, how do I create that? Moshe asked, how do I convey this to the people? And he doesn't conclude with what I'm about to suggest, but I thought in what he suggests, I would say that's the third image that the sages respond. When Moshe says, how do I do this? An image of the menorah in fire. What does that represent when he showed him? He already showed him with his finger the knobs and the flowers and all the bread. What does it then mean that he showed him that image, a separate statement from Chazal, that it was a fire? He showed him a menorah shel esh. And that, I believe, I would suggest, is answering this element of how the menorah was going to, throughout the generations, be that image of spiritual inspiration, because fire represents that passion. Fire represents the heat, the enlightenment, literally the fire. We call someone who's, they're on fire. They're burning with passion. And Hashem showed Moshe an image of what it should look like to have a menorah that when you saw that menorah, it would inspire the fire within the individual to burn with a desire for the spiritual growth, for getting higher, for growing higher, for doing more, that when you would see it, it would symbolize something. The showbread would give you your material wealth, But then when you turn to the menorah, that's something in that. How do you... So he showed him what that would look like, a menorah, a fire to construct. You do it, I'll help you, you throw in the fire, but you have to see the goal of what this menorah is, the goal of the fire, of the passion and the inspiration of what it represented for the world. So that last image is not the Rav. I don't want to, if that's not correct, to put that on him, but the idea that he expressed of Moshe, the difficulty of how do you convey that, maybe is answered with that statement from the sages of the image of the fire. But either way, those are the three different statements that the sages say were involved in this menorah, with all of its symbolism, and scratching the surface of the depths of the menorah, as we read about in this week's parsha. Have a wonderful day, and see you next week. Getting chaydesh, indeed.